Thank you very much, and welcome to this healthy panel game that encourages four patients to score points off a doctor. Still lucky the doctor who has on his panel Dilys Powell, Frank Muir, Antonio Fraser, and Dennis Norden. And we start with one of our traditional pastimes, hunting the common denominator. Frank, what do these have in common? A straw, a cutty, an alderman, a dudheen, I think, but I could be wrong. D-U-D-H-E-E-N. How do I pronounce it?
Dudheen.
Dudheen. And a nose warmer. What do they have in common?
Cutty means abbreviated. Alderman doesn't. Means rather the opposite. I think I know what it... If you looked at sheet music of Victorian music hall costermonger performers, they had the picture of them, Gus Elan or those, Albert Chevalier. They had their thumbs tucked in the armholes of their waistcoats and their bowlers on at a rakish angle. They had a thick, stubby pipe. And the thick, stubby pipe, I know, was called a nose warmer. So, obviously, these are all five different sorts of waistcoats.
And if they were pipes, what would they be made of, do you think?
You're going to want me to say clay.
I want you to say clay, and then I can give you two marks.
I'll take away one, because I doubt whether the nose warmer was a clay.
Well, we'll take one away from our word setter, Peter Moore, and give it to you as a bonus. So Frank gets three marks. Because they're alleged to be clay pipes of varying length. Antonio, what do these have in common? Grief, heavens, Lord, and gracious.
Well, you could put good in front of any of them, couldn't you?
Yes.
Good grief, good heavens, good Lord, good gracious.
And then you get two good marks if you do, because that is what we're looking for. Well done. When prefixed with good are expressions of astonishment. Dilys, apart from being weekdays, what do these have in common? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
I vaguely connect them with Wagner and the Ring, which has a lot of sort of...
That lasts for more days than...
characters called Wotan and Fricka and... I can't think of names. But I think that those must be the... That must be the connection between them. They are characters out of mythology, out of Nordic mythology.
Nordic mythology will do. Yes, well done. The only one I didn't know was Chu, T-I-U. Odin, or Thor, and
Tuesday.
Fire.
It's a feast day. Friday, also.
Dennis, what do these have in common, these phrases? To brace oneself, beside the mark, a parting shot, and point blank.
I couldn't write. The agency said I'd only have to do 40 words a minute.
Trying to write them down.
Yes, point blank. No, I can't read the first one. What?
To brace oneself.
Brace oneself, yes.
Beside the mark.
I think they're all sporting, because you've got the mark and shot. So it almost all come from archery, where you brace yourself and...
And do they're all terms originating in archery. Two marks to Dennis. Before we go on to round two here, Frank and Dennis, are the quotations you were given for the last round. Frank, the Hotel du Lac, the book that won the Booker Prize, Anita Bruckner wrote it. And Dennis, The Walrus and the Carpenter, two well-known characters. Meanwhile, we have one of these Darwinian rounds in which we try to trace the origins of the specious and the not-so-specious. Frank, the origin of the upshot of a matter.
I think we're back in... It's archery, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Two marks? It's going to... Come on.
Upsets the person who's lost. It's the end, isn't it?
It's the last shot in an archery contest. The upshot, whenever I've tried it, I've only managed down shots, never get it far enough. Antonia, a filbert nut. The origin of filbert in a filbert nut.
Well, Gilbert the filbert, the nut, presumably came after the filbert nut.
I'm afraid so, yes.
I am Gilbert the filbert.
I hoped Frank would sing. A filbert nut. Dennis.
It's a difficult
is
one,
it
this.
Natural history, because I'm lost. I don't have to do natural history, the producer said. I'm excused. Natural history.
He stays indoors.
Is it a special kind of nut?
It's to do with the date upon which the nuts, on average, first tend to fall.
Oh so the, if Gilbert was... Yes. A filbert nut. Is it one that falls clonk on the feast of St. Filbert?
It does indeed. It says here St. Philibert. I don't know St. Philibert. Do you know anything about
it? Oh, yes, I can tell you everything, but
afterwards... Just tell me.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's not suitable for family.
Oh,
he was put to death in a horrible way, and his nuts were... I mean...
Say no more. Let us turn to more savoury matters. Dillis, a nightmare. What's the origin of nightmare?
Well, night is all right, isn't it?
A night is all right.
Night
but
is
it's
all
night.
Right. Mare. Mm. It's a thing which sits on you at night. What it means is a terrible, terrible sort of dream. And the mare, M-A-R-E, which is not a female horse, is a terrible sort of spirit which sits on your chest at night. Doesn't it?
That will do. It was Norse for night hag, which we used to call the night matron when I was a medical student. The night hag, origin of nightmare. Well done.
It's to do with incubus and succubus,
yeah.
And I can never tell the difference, like stalactite and the other one.
Dennis, the origin of mum's the word.
That's it,
Somebody in the audience got very excited by that.
Yeah.
Certainly
wouldn't
keep
be
mum.
A champagne advertisement. Well, I'm not going to get
it's
the
Shakespearean.
Answer.
It's one of those Shakespeare plays that reads like a timetable.
Couldn't be Hamlet.
No, it's Bedford, Gloucester, Suffolk and Exeter. It's one of
Hythe
those.
To Exeter to Sussex. Is that one of those? Yes.
It's one of
For
those.
Mum's the word and
yes. Come on.
Screw your curry and sticky. I don't know.
You don't know.
I'm going to get a dozen bottles of champagne in the post, so I'm not really worried about it.
It's the second part of King Henry the VI, seal up your lips and give no word but mum. Can't remember who said it, but that's where it comes from. So let's move on to a more serious round. A sociologist, and who else, at the University of Stockholm, and where else, after 3 years' research, revealed her findings in a 300-page thesis. And her discovery was that the legs of pedestrians tend to move faster when their owners are in a hurry than when they're not so pressed for time. So what we're after is, from your own researchers, to reveal to us a fundamental truth that might equally enrich the treasury of human knowledge. Frank, have you some observation that you think...
I've lived a long and full life, Doctor, and a little wisdom has percolated. I think I would say to the young some things that I've observed through my years. One is, always buy a thermometer in the summer. It's got more mercury. And there's no such thing as a little garlic. And when somebody says to you, it's the principle of the thing, not the money, it's the money.
No.
Mark?
Yes. Oh, you get your marks for that. I think this a recording of this programme should be buried under a stone somewhere. That wisdom.
Lots of people have thought that. Yes.
Dug up in a few thousand years' time. Antonia, some insight into the human condition that you would like to record.
Well, this is, like Frank, has taken me absolutely years to discover. Because when I was little, when I sat on a seesaw with my mother, I seemed to be up in the air. She was down. And then when I sat with my children, they seemed to be down, and I mean up, and I was down. So after years of pondering this, I realized that the heaviest person on a seesaw probably is down on the ground. And this incredible natural law cannot be too widely spread. It is invaluable. Many a tight corner have I been saved by my awareness of this valuable truth.
I think there's a professorship awaiting you in Stockholm. Well done. Gillis.
I can only think of a quotation. Was it Belloc? I forget who it was, who said, "This learned fish has not sufficient brains to get into the water when it rains." And I think just, no, as a child one learns one doesn't get drier by getting into the sea. That's as far as I can go, really.
I think you need a team to work on that one. Well done, Dillis. Dennis.
Two thoughts I offer. One is it has been my observation that no matter how undecided or wishy-washy a person may be about art, religion, or politics, they always have very definite views about marzipan. And the other one is that you never realize how much furniture you've acquired until you have to go to the loo in the dark.
Right. Now we come to around. It's a rather nice typing error on my script. It calls them bimomials, and I think it's absolutely right. What we want are these colloquially united pairings, like fair and square, Bill and Coo. I think we've coined
Muir
a useful... Muir and Norden, rough and tumble. And I think they should be called bimomials from now on. Anyway, Frank, I'm going to define a bimomial, and you tell me what you think they are.
Oh, go on.
Waterborne debris.
Yours very sincerely, Flotsam and Jetsam.
Too much. Antonia, communal clamour.
Communal clamour, like the audience is doing all the time.
Colour and weep would.
Oh, hue and cry.
Hue and cry. Well done. Too much, Antonia.
It's an extraordinarily unhelpful tune.
It's purely frustration.
Well, I thought it was too easy. Dillis, the garb of repentance.
Sad and sorry.
No, not quite.
Sackcloth.
Write it down.
Sackcloth. And ashes.
Sackcloth. Sackcloth and ashes.
Well done, too much. Where on earth did you drag that out of your mind? Dennis, minded by the circumspect.
Minded by the circumspect. Is this translated from something?
Let me turn it into a question. What are minded by the circumspect?
In a pounds sort of and pence.
Alphabetical pence sort of way.
Alphabetical sort of way. What are minded by
the circumspect? There's a lot of
health and strength. Well done, Antonia. P's and Q's.
Well done. Too much.
She knows her alphabet, yes. She really knows it.
P's and faggots, P's and Q's. Well, we come to the Frank and Dennis's quotations, and Frank is the Hotel du Lac.
I've had another disappointment this week. I don't know whether I told you about it, but I've been trying to get onto this after-dinner speaking circuit, where you can earn hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds. If you belong to a program like My Word, and are famous. The two things aren't connected, but if you're one or the other, people like you to speak to them after dinner, and you get paid. And I got an offer, and it looked terribly promising. It was this firm wrote to me. It was their 10th anniversary, and they asked me, they're having this big do at a hotel in the in Hampshire, four-star hotel, the Broccoli Hall Country Hotel, and it looked wonderful, a magnificent old stately home converted into a hotel. And I was going to go there and they give me a luxury bedroom for the night, and a free dinner, of course, and then speak afterwards, and a four-figure fee. Four. What? That included VAT is £11.50. It's a start. So I agreed, and it, in a way, was a mistake. It was a dinner jacket at a fair. So I found a dark blue blazer I had, and took that down and heated the electric iron up to as hot as I could get it, and rubbed that briskly all over the lapels, and eventually a shine began to grow. And I reckon if the lighting was sufficiently dim, it would pass. So, none too confident, I drove away to Broccoli Hall Country Hotel in Hampshire. It looked wonderful. It deserved its four stars, it claimed on the brochure. And I went up to the commissionaire at the front in livery, and I said, the banqueting suite. He said, round our back, squire. Go on, round our back. And round the back was very different from round the front. The banqueting suite was a kind of ugly, wooden, new building, rather like one of those detention centres. The hotel room, my luxury room, was luxurious in array. It was about the size of two telephone boxes. It had a bathroom, which was full of free things you didn't want, like a strip of paper which didn't clean your shoes. But it had a kettle, at least. It had a chromium kettle, so I could make myself a cup of coffee. So I opened that little packet of cremated ferret. It smelled faintly of coffee. And the little tub of milk, which isn't milk, but curdles just the same. And when the kettle was boiling, I pulled it out, lifted it up to pour it into the table, and it didn't reach. The lead was only 18 inches, and I dropped the kettle onto my foot, a boiling hot kettle onto my foot. I was in agony. I filled the bidet, I had a bidet, and rested my dear foot in it, and I couldn't get my shoe back on, and the time was going on. And my sock wouldn't go on either, and was soaking wet. So, but I had a shoe kit there, so I put black boot polish all over my foot and limped into the banquet with my blazer with its polished lapels. Oh, the whole thing was awful in retrospect. The Winston Churchill Grand Ballroom was 6'4" high, the roof, and I'm 6'5". And hopping on my one shoe, I kept crashing my head against the ceiling on the upstroke of the walk. And it came time for me to speak. And they brought a microphone on the stand 8 inches tall. And it was about 3'6" below me. And I had to bend down at right angles and talk into it to make my speech. And I heard a click and my back locked. So the chap in charge of the thing, the master of foxhounds, who was sort of wandering around shouting, "Besides the John," this chap, he changed the microphone for a telescopic one, which is 6 foot high, but I couldn't straighten. So what I had to do was kneel on the table, exposing my blackened foot for all the food. And I just had room under the ceiling to do the speech. Nobody was listening to the speech. All the wine glasses had been replaced by pints of beer, and they were playing cards, and there was a chorus of rugby songs going on just to the right, with vile words. And I stumbled through my speech, and the whole thing ended, and the chap came up afterwards and said, "Lark that, wasn't it?" Nothing like a posh hotel do for an evening. So you should do a story about it. Write a book about it. And I thought, I will, and expose that nightmare, that incubus of an evening I had. And I started tapping away, my fingers flying lightly over the keys, the cheerful chatter sounding like young monkeys at play. When suddenly I realized that the book had already been written. It was written by Anita Buchner. Not only that, it won the Booker Prize. And not only that, it had the same title as mine could only have, the only title you could give to the story of that evening's displeasure. The Hotel Du Lark.
Thank you very much, Frank. You put me right off cremated ferret. Dennis, let's see how you get on with The Walrus and the Carpenter.
Right. Now, if I may have your attention for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, it's now my pleasure to announce the winners of the raffle. And as vice chairman of the organisation known as SBPAL, Show Business People Against Literalism, I'm pleased to say that the proceeds of the raffle will be devoted to helping victims of that affliction, those poor unfortunates who, as we all know, suffer from a total inability to take common phrases or expressions other than literally. So if, for example, a literalism sufferer sees something in a chemist labelled stick deodorant, he'll find himself wondering how many people are troubled by smelly sticks. Or if he picks up a carton of orange juice in a supermarket whose top bears the instruction, open here, his first reaction will be, I certainly won't, I'm going to take it home and open it. Now, is it necessary to dwell on the distress and alarm such moments can cause? Speaking as a lifelong literalism sufferer myself, I need only quote such recent instances as the sign I saw in a department store window saying, sale last week. I stood there. I stood there for ages wondering why they were announcing the fact they'd had a sale the previous week. Similarly, when I came across a headline in a newspaper that read, actress said improved after car accident, all that occurred to me was that most people in such circumstances say, where am I? And I won't even go into the dreadful thoughts that were summoned up by a headline in a colour supplement that said, how to cook Chinese. to say nothing of the images that came to mind when I saw an advertisement in that same supplement showing a picture of a small wardrobe underneath which were the words, you put it up yourself. which is why we are so grateful to the wide spectrum of great-hearted show business people who've rallied round to buy these raffle tickets, ranging as they do from such stage and TV luminaries as that merry madcap Russ Abbott to the husband of Antonia Fraser, who, as some of you may know, writes little things for the theatre. But all of them, great or small, confess themselves particularly moved by the plight of literalism's younger victims. Such as, for instance, the little schoolboy who was asked the question, if six apples cost 24p, how much is a dozen? To which, because there is no lower limit to the age that human beings will accept words at their face value, he replied, a dozen is 12. And similarly misunderstood was the case of the 7-year-old girl literalist who claimed that Peter Piper couldn't possibly have picked a peck of pickled peppers because peppers aren't pickled till after they've been picked. Right? And an even more undeserved punishment was visited on the lad whose answer to the question, with what do you connect the name Baden-Powell, was the unassailably literal, you connect the name Baden-Powell with a hyphen. So as the money from this raffle will help to give all of those a brighter future, let's waste no more time in announcing the winners of what another of our SBPAL members once termed the glittering prizes. Because among them, you'll remember, is not only a pair of solar-powered leg warmers, a chocolate-covered salami, and a wicker toilet seat, which Alan has autographed personally, but the two first prizes are a full-size stuffed carp and a porcelain model of Hadrian's Wall that plays Arrivederci Roma. So if all you raffle ticket holders will now please get out your little stubs, I'll put my hand in the hat and tell you that the winners are... Now, isn't that a coincidence? The stuffed carp and the Hadrian's Wall model have been won the none other than the two personalities I just happened to mention earlier, Mr. Abbott and Lady Antonia's husband. In other words, the Wall Russ and the Carp Pinter.
Thank you, Dennis. Well, while you were giving us that moving account of your complaint, I asked my nurse to add up the score, and she tells me that our lucky winners are Dillis and Frank. So it's a hamper of free bandages for them, and Antonia and Dennis will have to make do with a bottle of the black cough mixture. Until we all meet again, goodbye.